Welcome to this Ufula audio production of The Lone Ranger Rides by Fran Stryker. Volume 7, Chapter 20, Red Oak. Red Oak is a town that was badly misnamed, and it was utterly devoid of the implied qualities of sturdiness, solidity, or well-proportioned size. A far more appropriate name might have been chosen, something perhaps like the night-blooming Sirius, or the cloyingly sweet nicotine, that sleeps all day and spreads its glory of white petals and sweet odors through the night. But that would have been slanderous to the blossoms. Red Oak slept all day behind the drab, sun-bleached, false-front buildings on both sides of the only road. In rainy weather, fattening sows and lame old mongrel curs would wallow side by side in mud holes made reeking by manure and garbage. When it was hot, the dust was equally intolerable. The men of town, men who ran or worked in the resorts all night and slept all day, were tallow-faced and gave the impression of having lived beneath a log or a rock or in a woodwork crack. The women by day were sallow, wan, unhappy, and consumptive. Their nocturnal luster was washed out by the sunlight, so they remained out of sight until after oil lamps were burning to flatter them and help them sell their wares. Red Oak's only reason for existence was to serve as an oasis for the men from countless miles of surrounding ranch and rangeland, and after dark she served and served and served. Proprietors understood their patrons and catered cunningly to their demands for reckless, dangerous sport. They offered varying risks, from loss of cash through loss of health and reputation to loss of life itself. Young cowhands in their teens fraternized with gamblers and killers, each calling for the drink he could afford. Easy women whose garish imitation jewelry reflected the glitter of lights through the nebulous tobacco smoke flaunted their soft hips freely before the eyes that were accustomed to long-horned cattle and hard fists of men. For those whose recklessness in younger years had dulled their desire for women, there was gambling and drinking to suit any taste or pocketbook. Bets could be made in thousands and covered. On the other hand, loose change would buy an evening. There was a jail, a one-room, flimsy structure, designed to hold obnoxious drunks whose cash was spent up. Slim Peasley was the turnkey. The office was one that would have been beyond his scope if he had tried to fulfill the duties of a deputy sheriff, but Slim didn't. He shuffled about town, his heavy badge weighting down his dirty, limp shirt, cadging a drink where he could and prying his long nose like a chisel into things that were none of his concern, while he closed his eyes to flagrant violations of civil, moral, and spiritual law. Slim seemed to have no chin at all. His chest was in a hollow made by rounded shoulders. In profile, the most striking things about him were his nose and Adam's apple. He had a close resemblance to a question mark. His stretched suspenders let his pants drop low, and his shirt and underwear were generally apart from his stomach, so that he could scratch. There seemed always to be some part of Slim's anatomy that needed scratching, and the degree of his absorption in whatever he might be looking at could be measured by the part he scratched. It was Slim Peasley who had locked Mort Cavendish up. Bryant had turned his nephew over to the deputy at 9 o'clock, before the evening in Red Oak had really got started. Slim had actually looked frightened when he found he'd have to guard a sober man until the sheriff came from the county seat to take over. When Bryant placed the charge of murder against his nephew, Slim grew pale. Only stern Bryant's blustered threats made Slim accept the responsibility as the lesser danger. Then Bryant had limped his way along the street, cursing the trollops who accosted him. He had entered the hotel and rented a room in the rear of the first floor so they wouldn't have to torture himself needlessly with stairs. He was asleep when the evening reached a peak at midnight. At midnight or shortly after, the Lone Ranger reached the outskirts of Red Oak, not far from the center of the town. He turned off the trail and guided Silver to the rear of the row of buildings on one side. He felt considerably rested after dozing in the saddle during the ride from the Gap, and ready for whatever might be ahead. His original intention to talk with Brian Cavendish had not been changed by the confession of his prisoner, who had escaped. In the shadow of the buildings, he dismounted and left Silver to proceed on foot. Coming to the back of the hotel, he turned and passed through the space between the buildings. At one end of the porch, he halted. A man was coming along the road. The Lone Ranger held cupped hands close to his face, as if in the act of lighting a pipe. The gesture, together with his forward-tilted hat, served to conceal the fact that he was masked. He had to be extremely careful in Red Oak. There were people in the town who had known him as a Texas Ranger. He had hoped that the clerk in the Red Oak Hotel would be a stranger, and that his mask removed and his face somewhat concealed by dust, he could inquire as to the location of Bryant's room. He was, however, spared this trouble. Between his fingers he saw the overdressed man who passed him mount the steps and enter the hotel lobby. There was something about the man that was vaguely familiar, yet the Lone Ranger was sure he had never seen him before. He heard the high-heeled, beautifully shined boots clatter on the floor to the accompaniment of jingling spurs. He could see through the door at an oblique angle, and he heard the stranger ask about Brian Cavendish.
"Room 10, the clerk said curtly. "And he left strict orders he wasn't to be pestered."
"Well, that's too bad," replied the other, "because I'm going to disturb him plenty right now."
The clerk tried to argue, but got nowhere. Room 10, marked the Lone Ranger. He left his post beside the porch and hastened to the rear of the building. A dark window from room 10 was open wide. The masked man crouched beneath it as he heard an insistent pounding on the door. Brian Cavendish groaned first in sleep and then in waking.
"What the hell?"
he grumbled. The bed creaked, then the rapping on the door again.
"Go away, I'm sleeping,"
snapped Bryant.
"Open the door,"
replied a muffled voice.
"Who is it? What do you want?"
"It's Wally."
Well, that accounted for the familiarity in the man's face. Wally Cavendish had a resemblance in the eyes and forehead to both Vince and Jeb. A matchlight flickered in the room, and then the steadier light of a candle. The Lone Ranger risked discovery to peer over the edge of the window. He saw Bryant, shirtless, sitting on the edge of the bed, rubbing his eyes sleepily. The man muttered something beneath his breath, then rose and steadied himself by gripping the edge of the table.
"I'm a-coming. Wait a damn minute."
The old man had to resume his seat on the bed and rub his knees. Again he stood, and this time managed to get to the door and slip the bolt. The Lone Ranger felt guilty at his eavesdropping, yet he felt he was justified in gathering what facts he could in any way that he could get them. The game he played had life itself as the stake, and the odds were against him to begin with. Wally entered the bedroom with a swaggering manner and closed the door behind him.
"You're staying in Red Oak all night, huh?"
he asked.
"Did you wake me up to ask me that?"
snarled Bryant.
"What in the damned hell does it look like I'm doing? It's too hard a trip for me to go back home. I'll be going back in the morning."
"That's not what I came for, Uncle Bryant," said Wally hastily. "Don't jump on me till I can finish."
"Wall?"
"I found a woman that'll look after the kids."
I didn't think you could tend to a job as complete as that. When'll she be coming to the basin?"
"That's just it," replied the fop hesitantly. I tried to talk to her into going there, but she wouldn't. She said she'd look after him if we paid her, of course, and if we brought her the kids here to live with her."
"I knowed it. Well, find somebody else. Find somebody that'll come to the basin."
Wally shook his head slowly.
"I don't know if I can. It ain't easy to find a woman around here that take good care of youngsters."
While Bryant appeared to ponder this, Wally went on quickly.
"I thought maybe Penelope could come along with him for a few days till Mrs. Hastings gets sort of acquainted with him. Wouldn't that be a good way?"
"Maybe so."
"Good enough then, Uncle Bryant. Didn't want to do nothing till I talked to you about it. I won't bother you no more now. I'm sorry to disturb you, but I figured on riding back home with the rest of the boys. And I wanted to get you okay on this Mrs. Hastings, so as I could tell Penelope."
"You're through talking now,"
Wally rose.
Reckon so. You'll be coming back on the buckboard, won't you?
How the hell else could I get home? Didn't I fetch the buckboard?
That's right, Uncle Bryant. I'm sorry not to have thought that out.
Now get the hell out of here and let me get some sleep.
Still, Wally didn't go. He shifted his weight uneasily from one foot to the other.
There's something I wanted to say, he fumbled. I don't want you to get sore about it, though.
Wally!
I thought it was right smart of yours, the way you handled Mort.
Mort killed his wife, didn't he?
That's right, Uncle Bryant.
I wouldn't let that squirt called Yuma know I turned Mort over to the law. He'd have figured I'd done it on account of being scared of him. I wouldn't have given him the satisfaction of knowing Mort was jailed for murder.
Wally grinned synthetically. His whole manner before Bryant Cavendish was one of cowering subjugation, of fawning in a way that must have been revolting to the hard old man.
You done just right. I'd have never thought of it, Uncle Bryant. You jailed Mort, and that took care of the legal angles. Of course, you couldn't be expected to let him swing from a rope, though.
Bryant looked up sharply.
No one will ever know how he busted out. Fact is, he might have broken out of the jail without no outside help.
He's out!
Exclaimed Bryant. Wally nodded, a look of surprise on his face.
Didn't you know it?
No, I didn't damn well know it. I've been sleeping here. How in the devil would I know?
Gosh, he must have got out without no help, unless he bribed Sim Pleasley.
Where is he now?
I don't know. I just heard a while ago in one of the saloons he was loose. Peasley acted real upset about it.
Surprisingly, Bryant made no further comment. Wally waited a moment longer, then turned and opened the door.
Good night, Uncle Bryant, he said.
Bryant said nothing. The door closed and the old man sat there for fully 5 minutes, muttering unintelligibly. Then he rose and would have blown out the candle, but he was halted by a voice from the window. Stay right where you are and don't yell. The Lone Ranger stepped easily over the low windowsill and into the room as Bryant Cavendish turned. Chapter 21. An Admission from Bryant Cavendish. A close-range view of Bryant Cavendish fulfilled everything the Lone Ranger might have expected from what he had heard about him. His face looked as if it had been chopped out of a block of granite. His eyes, small and deep-set, were the coldest, hardest eyes he had ever seen. They were the eyes of a man who would die before he would forgive a wrong. A man who had lived with hate. Bryant showed not even the slightest trace of fear. Even in his undershirt he could look haughty and arrogant. He met the steady gaze of the masked man, his mouth clamped hard shut.
Cavendish, began the Lone Ranger in a low but decisive voice. I've come a long way to talk to you.
There was no reply.
First of all, what do you know about the murder of some Texas Rangers in Bryant's Gap?
There was no change in the older man's expression. His chin lifted, just the slightest, but he said nothing. Neither did he nod or shake his head.
There are men working for you who are wanted by the law,
continued the Lone Ranger.
6 Texas Rangers went through that gap to arrest the men you know as Sawtell, Rangoon, Lonergan, and Lombard. Those Rangers were ambushed. Did you know that?
Cavendish spoke. His voice was scarcely more than a whisper, but the intensity of it, the suppressed emotion that was dripping from his words, seemed to make the ends of the masked man's nerves vibrate.
You get!
Not yet, Cavendish. We have a lot of things to talk about.
The Lone Ranger moved nearer to the flint-faced Bryant and sat down, facing the open window with his back against the door.
There's a renegade army of bandits across the border. They've been buying Cavendish brand cattle. That in itself has been handled in a perfectly legal manner. The cattle have been sold on this side of the border. There's another angle to it, however. Ranches surrounding your basin land have been struck by thieves. A lot of cattle have been stolen and several men have been murdered. These assaults have been generally blamed on Ricardo's renegades. But that hasn't been the case. Ricardo has bought your cattle and the stolen cattle have been herded into your basin. The Lone Ranger paused. It looked as if Cavendish were about to speak. He trembled a little as he said,
"For the last time, stranger, get!"
"Not yet, Cavendish. I'll tell you something more. The stolen cattle are taken into the basin by a trail that comes straight down one side of Thunder Mountain. Once in the basin, the cattle are treated to a running iron, and the brand changed to one of the many brands that are registered in your name. Circle Bar Stock is changed to 8 Box. Lazy S becomes the 8 on one side. I could go on with many other brands you've registered. Brands that can be made out of the marks on stolen cattle. The newly branded stock is held in the basin until the scars heal over. Then it's taken out through the mountain trail while other stock is brought in. Now you realize I'm aware of what's going on."
Brian's agitation could never have been caused by fear. Therefore, it must have been an anger that was almost consuming him. The Lone Ranger's voice became sharper as he went on, driving home every point emphatically. He himself was angry. The stolid manner of Bryant, the refusal to acknowledge that he even heard the masked man's statements, called for a willpower that was almost incomprehensible in the face of cold facts.
"In connection with the cattle stealing, you furnished a haven for any outlaws who wanted to hide there. I don't know how you contacted all those fugitives, but it was managed somehow. They learned that the Texas Rangers had been sent for, so they ambushed those men. If others go there, they will either meet the same fate or find a perfectly innocent-looking ranch, while the wanted men hide in the mountain retreat. Am I right?"
Bryant Cavendish spoke again.
"If you're right, what are you going to do about it?"
"You have a niece, a girl named Penelope."
The mention of the girl's name brought a quick reaction. Bryant's hard jaw shot forward and he snapped,
"You just damn well leave her out of this."
"I'm sorry, but I can't leave her out. It's for her that I'm speaking. She's always trusted you, Cavendish, in spite of everything she saw. The type of men you hired, the trail on Thunder Mountain. In spite of the murder of the Texas Rangers, that girl has believed in you. She would never have believed you capable of leading a gang to steal the cattle that Ricardo and his men did not dare to steal, and selling them to him at a low enough price so he could resell at a profit on the other side of the border. You ask what I'm going to do? I'm going to ask you to help put the thieves in jail and send murderers to pay in full. You're an old man, Cavendish. At best you have but a few years left. And after that, what is there for Penelope? Who's going to take care of that girl when you're gone? Would you leave her to the mercies of those idiot cousins of hers, or killers like Sawtell and Lombard? I'll lay my cards right on the table now. I can't at the present time do anything. That's why I've come to you. There must be something that's turned you from an honest man to this. What is it? Tell me. Let me help you straighten things out. Tell me who has a hold over you, who's making you do these things."
The Lone Ranger drew a folded paper from his pocket and spread it on the table before Bryant Cavendish. His eyes were fixed on Cavendish, who seemed to be waging an inward battle for composure. Cavendish glanced at the paper, then at the Lone Ranger.
"This," the masked man said, "is a document that Lonergan drew up. It has a place for your relations to sign their names, and when they do so, they accept a certain consideration from you and agree that when your will is read, they..."
"I know all about it,"
snapped Bryant. "That's what I was uncertain about. Your signature isn't required on this, and it would have been a simple matter for Lonergan to have written it and had your relatives sign without your knowledge."
Cavendish showed more of an inclination to talk.
"It's legal, ain't it?"
he asked as if there was some doubt in his mind.
"It is legal."
"That's all I want to know."
"You wanted it prepared?"
"Sure."
"But there must be a will, your will with your signature. That would have to be left to name the people who inherit all your land."
"There's a will, too, all signed and witnessed."
Bryant pushed himself to his feet and stood above the seated masked man.
"I never explain nothing. I never ask for help or favors. I never will. When the time comes I can't handle my affairs, I'll be ready to lie down and die. I don't know how you got that paper, but you're going to hand it over to me now. It's mine and I'll have it.
You won't explain a thing,
repeated the Lone Ranger.
You heard me.
The masked man rose and turned to face the other squarely, taking his eyes away from the window to do so.
I hoped that we might work together, but you won't have it that way. If you're sure this paper is just the way you want it, then.
The Lone Ranger broke off when a shot crashed into the room from a gun beyond the window. Bryant Cavendish gasped, then staggered back, clutching with both hands at his broad chest. He stumbled and fell across the bed. Lone Ranger's gun leapt up while the masked man sprang for the window. He saw a man's form running fast. It was too dark in the shadows to determine much about the fugitive, but it was obvious that it was he who had fired the shot at Bryant. Lone Ranger's gun barked and a silver bullet flew. The running man spilled forward, rolling from his momentum. There was a hammering upon the door, men's shouts demanding to know what the shooting was about. Lone Ranger holstered his gun. Ignoring the yells and the shouts outside the room, he bent over the wounded man. Bryant still breathed, but his pulse was ragged and his eyes were closed. Another instant and those outside would smash the door down and force their way inside. To be found there masked with Cavendish shot and one bullet gone from his own gun would mean the certain capture and probable lynching of the Lone Ranger. He had no choice. He lifted Bryant Cavendish and carried him toward the window. The dead weight of the unconscious man was too much for the Lone Ranger in his fatigued and weakened condition. He rested his burden on the window sill and then whistled sharply once. The whistle brought renewed shouting from the men beyond the door. Their cries were wild and unorganized. Some cried to the world at large,
"Bust in! Bust down the door! Don't let him out! He's in there! I heard him!"
These and other cries were mixed with shouts of warning and advice.
"Don't you try to get away. We got you trapped. Come out and surrender or we'll shoot to kill."
If only the door and the bolt would withstand the assault of the first few blows. Silver was coming fast, racing toward the window where the masked man waited. The big stallion clattered close and whinnied shrilly while the men in the hall yelled new suggestions.
"He's got a horse outside. Get around to the window. I heard a horse. There's a whole gang of them in there."
In a moment, Bryant was thrown across the saddle. The masked man leapt behind him as a shattering blow shivered the door and the wall that supported it.
"Come on, Silver," Lone Ranger called.
He couldn't leave the vicinity just yet. There was one thing of which he had to make certain. He rode to the man he'd shot. Leaping from the saddle, he found the wounded man quite conscious, but in pain from a bullet in the fleshy part of his thigh.
"Not serious. You'll be all right as soon as..."
He broke off with a gasp of surprise. This man's bullet wound was slight, but the man was dying. There was another weapon, a knife of the sort that can be easily thrown. All that showed was the handle sticking straight out from the back of the stranger's neck. It took but a moment for the Lone Ranger to visualize what had happened. This fugitive, having fired point blank at Bryant Cavendish, had raced on foot to reach a clump of trees. Perhaps his horse was waiting there, perhaps a trusted friend. This friend or someone else within the shelter of the trees had thrown the knife after the Lone Ranger's shot had dropped the man, probably to seal his lips with death. Whatever the purpose of the murder, the man on the ground would never talk. It was little short of miraculous he had lived at all after taking the knife in such a vital place. The Lone Ranger could do nothing. The man slipped into unconsciousness with death a few seconds away. Meanwhile, the Lone Ranger was in danger. Yelling, shouting men were charging, some on foot, some on horseback from the rear of the hotel. There was no time for thought or planning. The only important thing right now was to escape. The Lone Ranger leapt and shouted,
"Hi-yo, Silver!"
And the stallion lunged ahead while bullets buzzed too close. Leaning low over the strong neck of Silver, the masked man clung to Bryant Cavendish. "Now," he thought, "those men will not only think I've shot Cavendish, but shot and killed that other man as well." He slapped Silver on the neck. "Old boy," he cried, "from now on we've got to travel fast. If they catch us, it'll mean a lynching." Chapter 22, Stalemate. After the shooting in Red Oak, Some insisted that a posse be formed at once to scour the country for the unknown rider who had taken Brian Cavendish with him. Others were in favor of letting the law, represented by Slim Peasley, take its fumbling course, while the majority asked resentfully what the hell the disturbance was all about, then turned back to drinks, games, women, or combinations of the same. Wally Cavendish was much in evidence, for once in his life looking hot-faced and somewhat disheveled. He insisted that prompt action be taken, that something be done about his uncle's abduction.
"A hell of a lot you care about him," snapped Jim Bates, the hotel owner. "Now he's gone, you know damn well you're ready to let out a war whoop of plain and fancy cheering."
Wally ignored the comment and spoke to the group assembled in the lobby.
"It's high time there was some law around this place. First, Morth gets out of there without half trying. Then Uncle Brian's carried away, likely dead, and all we got is that buzzard bait Peasley. That man on the white horse was leaning over someone when we done seen him, wasn't he?"
Someone in the crowd said,
"Yeah!"
"Well, what about him? Is anything being done?"
"He's being brought in here. Some of the boys went to see about him."
"Well, it's high time,"
barked Wally, with a fire that was unusual.
"The boys that had horses handy went after that critter," explained Jim Bates. "Maybe they'll catch him."
"If they do, they'll jail him the same as they did with Mort, and 10 minutes after Slim's back is turned, he'll be scot-free again."
"I thought you had a hunch," said Jim Bates, "that it was your Uncle Bryant that let Mort out of the calaboose."
"That's what I thought."
"Maybe this hombre that rid away won't have no Uncle Bryant to let him loose."
The door opened, and men came in carrying a still form, which they placed on the plank floor near the wall.
"He's dead," one of them said, looking at Wally with a strange expression.
"Is it anybody we know?" asked Bates.
One of the newcomers nodded seriously.
"Yep, sure is."
He stood aside. One leg showed the red result of a bullet wound, but this was hardly more than a scratch. In the back of his neck, the handle of a knife showed. The man was Mort Cavendish.
"My brother!" exclaimed Wally. "It's Mort!"
He wheeled to the silent men around him.
"Who done this? Who want to kill poor Mort? He never hurt no one in his life. He..."
Jim Bates stepped up.
"Listen to me. We don't want none of your crocodile acting around here. In the first place, whoever stuck that knife in Mort's neck saved him from being strung up for killing his wife. You know that damn well. In the second place, you never gave a damn about any of your family, and you still don't. With Mort done for, it's just one less to whack up Bryant's basin."
Wally stood a moment, and he said in a calmer voice,
"All right, Bates. Bryant's gone and Mort's killed. Now let's figure out who done it."
"What the hell do you care?"
Wally was obviously not well liked by the men in Red Oak. Their manner showed that they cared nothing about helping him. The man who died had deserved killing, and no sympathy was wasted. If the murderer had walked in at that moment, it was quite likely he would have been told that his duty was to handle the burial expenses as a moral obligation, then take drinks on the house.
"Only thing I don't like," muttered somebody, "is this knifing business. It ain't good form no ways. Why the hell, when that critter dropped Mort with the shot in the leg, didn't he finish him with another slug, instead of sticking him with this?"
"You can't leave him there," said Jim Bates. "What do you want done with the remains?"
Wally dug into his pocket and dumped what cash he had on the hotel desk.
"You handle things," he told Bates. "Have the coroner do whatever has to be done, then hire someone with a cart to haul him to the basin. I'll have him buried there."
Bates nodded, scooping up the cash.
"I'll tend to things. Whatever Mort had in his pockets was took out by Peasley when he was jailed. I reckon you can get his cash and whatever else he had from Slim."
"I will."
"Hold on," said Bates. "Old Bryant has a buckboard and team in the shed. He brought him when he came. Why don't you take Mort back in that your own self?"
Wally explained he was leaving shortly and would drive the team and ride the buckboard, with his own horse hitched behind. He had to hurry, though, and didn't care to wait until the coroner's work was finished. In fact,
He planned to start back for the basin right away. He wanted to be there by daybreak.
All right, then, said Bates. I'll see that everything's tended to.
Further conversation and conjecture was carried to the nearest saloon. The general opinion seemed to be that Bryant had helped his nephew out of jail. Then someone unknown had called upon Bryant. Mort had found him there when trying to sneak into the room. The unknown man had fired, but Mort had run away. The gunman had fired again, and this time he hit Bryant. Blood on the bed proved that Bryant had been hit. Then pursuit of Mort, who ran despite the wounded leg, led to his final death by stabbing. The eyewitnesses from the hotel room had first seen the stranger with the white horse standing close to Mort. That was just before he had ridden away. This explanation suited everyone, and further action was dependent on Slim Peasley, which meant that there would probably be no further investigation. Wally went from place to place, locating the men from the basin, telling them what had happened and suggesting that they start at once for home. He was the last to leave Red Oak. By the time he had driven the buckboard through the rough, rocky bottom of the gap, the cowhands had been home for some time. When he drove in at daybreak, he found them still awake and excited over the discovery of old Gimlet. They hadn't found Sawtell, Rangoon, Lombard, or Lonigan in the bunkhouse.
"Don't know where the hell those boys went," they said. "They don't dare risk going to Red Oak, 'cause you can never tell when the sheriff will be there, or maybe a ranger or some gent that recognize them and turn them in for the reward."
Wally was tired and annoyed at the missing quartet. He ordered fresh horses hitched to the buckboard, gave instructions for the disposal of old Gimlet's body, and then went to the house. Throwing open the door, he stopped abruptly. A strange sight greeted him. One lamp was lit. Though the wick was turned low, there was sufficient illumination to reveal disorder in the room. On top of a table, a chair. On the chair, a log braced against the beamed ceiling. Sitting near the fireplace, Wally saw an Indian. Furiously angry, he started forward and then halted again. The Indian was wide awake, holding a heavy revolver in his hand.
"What the?"
started Wally.
"You," muttered the Indian. "Close the door. Sit down. We're going to wait."
"Wait for what? Who are you and what are you doing here? What's all this mean?"
"Penelope is going to wake pretty quickly," the Indian replied. "She'll tell you."
A howl get from beneath his feet made Wally here. Jump. Tonto grinned at his surprise.
"Bad fellers are down there," he explained. "Penelope will tell you when she's awake."
"I'm awake now."
It was Penelope, wrapped in a bathrobe, coming down the stairs. Daybreak found the Lone Ranger once more in the saddle. He rode slowly at first, but as the light increased and made the trail he followed more distinct, he increased his speed. With several hours' rest, the masked man felt much better. Tonto, he was sure, could handle things at the ranch house until Wally returned. The Indian's position there would be explained by Penny. Bryant Cavendish had been left in the cave. Now the Lone Ranger rode in pursuit of Yuma. Wally, with the wagon and all the horsemen going to the basement, had passed close to the cave in Bryant's Gap, while the masked man and Bryant Cavendish were there. The hooves of these men's horses had in many cases blotted out the tracks of Yuma, but an occasional mark where the shale was soft assured the masked man that he was still on the trail of the one he sought. There were times when he had to dismount and examine the ground closely to make sure he hadn't gone astray. And then he found that Yuma had left the gap. New scratches on the rocks of one side of it showed where his horse had fought its way up an almost sheer ascent to gain the level land above. The Lone Ranger guided Silver up that same path. Now the ground, covered in most places by a sort of turf, was softened by the recent rains and held distinct hoof prints of the big cowpuncher's horse. "Come on, Silver," the Lone Ranger called as he saw the trail stretching out toward the horizon. The stallion fairly flew over the ground that felt so soft after the sharp and sliding stones of the gap. The marks of Yuma's horse were spaced to show that it, too, had traveled at top speed, but Yuma had ridden in the darkness, which was probably the reason that his horse had fallen. The Lone Ranger saw the gopher hole into which the horse had stepped. and nearby, the body of the horse itself. He dismounted and examined the ground. Marks clearly showed that Yuma had spilled over the head of the falling horse. The dead horse was a few yards distant. The foreleg, to judge by its position, unquestionably was broken. A bullet through the head had ended the beast's suffering. Yuma had taken the most essential things from his duffel and left the rest. His footprints led out in the same direction he'd been going. The masked man mounted and rode on. It wasn't long before he saw a pile of rocks. They were huge boulders tossed into the middle of an open plain, as if left and forgotten by some builder eons ago when the world was made. The footprints led directly toward these rocks. "That," mused the Lone Ranger, "is where the man I want has taken refuge. I wonder if he'll shoot." "I doubt it," he rode ahead, considering the type of man he had to face. What he had seen of Yuma had left a rather favorable impression. When the cowboy had claimed leadership of the cattle-stealing organization, the Lone Ranger had doubted the truth of what he said. It seemed obvious that Yuma sought to shield Bryant Cavendish in order that the old man might remain alive and free to safeguard Penny. The masked man slowed Silver to a walk and drew his gun. He advanced slowly, without taking his eyes off the rocks. Presently, the cowboy's head popped out, and then a quick shot struck the ground a little to one side of the Lone Ranger. He rode on slowly. 100 yards away from the natural fortress, the masked man dismounted, then went forward on foot.
"I'm coming to get you, Yuma,"
he shouted.
"I won't be taken alive," came the reply. "Get aboard that horse and vamoose. I don't want to drill you."
The Lone Ranger walked ahead. There was another shot, this time one that whistled as it passed. The space had narrowed down to 50 yards when Yuma cried out again.
"Stand back. I tell you, stranger, I don't want to kill you. You can't take me alive. Them shots was only warnings. Now go back."
The masked man made no reply, nor did he change his pace or course. Long strides carried him ahead. He held one gun in readiness, but didn't return the shots that had been fired toward him.
"In the name of God," shouted Yuma, "you're going to make me kill you. This is your last chance. Now turn back."
The Lone Ranger took 5 more strides forward, then Yuma fired again. This time, the bullet tugged at the sleeve of his shirt. Yuma was either shooting to kill and missing, or shooting with rare skill to come as close as he could without inflicting injury. While he walked forward, the Lone Ranger called out again.
"You know you're not going to kill me, Yuma. Because if you do, there'll be others here to take my place. I'm coming to ram your lies down your throat."
His heavy gun was still unfired. 10 paces from the rock, he halted.
"I can put a bullet through you, Yuma. Next time you look out from behind that rock to fire at me. I don't want to do that. I don't even want to shoot your gun away. I may need your help. I don't want your gun hand wounded. Now come on out."
Yuma's voice came from behind the rocks.
"Next time I fire, I'll shoot to kill. Heaven help me, stranger. I don't want to do that, but I swear I'll have to. It's you or me, and it's not going to be me."
"I'm waiting for you," Lone Ranger replied.
"If you don't turn back when I count to 3, I'm going to fire."
Yuma started counting slowly.
1, 2...
And then there was a pause.
"For the love of heaven, turn back."
"I'm still waiting, Yuma."
"God knows you asked for it," Yuma shouted. 3.
And then he leapt out from behind the rock and fired.